Hello, would you please start sitting down? We're going to get started very soon. Jonathan Cohen. Folks, we're about to get started. Jonathan, we need you. Eugenio, can you take your seat, please? Thank you. Thank you. Hunt and Mike, we're about to begin. Please don't bother Mike. Bring him. Please give him back to us. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome back. Okay. I'd like to formally open the board meeting and welcome all the returning board members and all the new board members. It's great that we got to this point, that we now have a half-elected board. The interaction between the new and the old is, I think, very productive. And we all welcome the new board members and the new spirit and the involvement they've brought. And Jonathan Cohen, speaking for the new board members, has a comment.
Well, I thought it would be appropriate right now, speaking on behalf of IMEO, the newly elected board members, I'm sure that they'll approve of what I have to say. I think that there has been an incredible accomplishment by the original board in a period of 1 year, and it was an extremely difficult year. The circumstances were much more difficult than I think we new board members will ever face, and I think if the years ahead are productive and easier for us, it's because of the groundwork and that they have laid and the hours and hours of time and effort. I think it's important to note that the time and the energy and the intelligence that they've given was all freely given. I think that the original board deserves a great deal more reward and praise than it's going to receive, but I think I speak for all the board members, and I think probably for many of you, when I say you have our genuine respect and admiration for what you've done, and I'm very glad to be able to work with you and that many of you will remain during this year. I'd ask all of you to join with me and express the real appreciation we have for what they've done.
Okay, let me, with the help of Joe and Mike, just go through the agenda for this morning. The first thing, for those of you who are new board members, at our meeting in Santiago, we started out with the open board meeting, and just to make it clear, there are observers, but we're really here to talk to each other. We're using microphones so we can be listened to, but we're trying to, this is a business meeting where we have agenda items to deal with and we need to come to conclusions, and so our focus really should be on our fellow board members. Joe, why don't you tell us what the state of play is with NSI and the NSI discussion. Are we ready to have it now, or do we need to have it later?
I would suggest, Esther, that you go through your housekeeping matters first and just let us get our act in shape here. We're ready to deal with this, but we could do it more cogently if we had just a few minutes to prepare.
Okay. Well, then why don't I hand the meeting over to Mike?
Thank you. Perhaps we might handle this by inverting the agenda completely
and starting briefly with a discussion of the dates for the next meeting. We have before us the preliminary staff planning of the dates of the 7th to the 9th of March. There's been some, it is the case that at least one of the new board members cannot, that is not here today, cannot meet with us on those dates in March either. And so there has been some discussion of moving ourselves forward or backward by a week to a site that, in fact, may not be Egypt, which is what we previously discussed. I think it's important, given that we now have not a dozen busy people's calendars to coordinate, but more like 22 or 23 people, that we not go away from this meeting with without having selected the dates. I wonder if we could see a show of hands for the Wednesday, Thursday of the week preceding and the week following. Yes, yes, I certainly will. The dates in the week preceding would be
February 29th to March 2nd, something like that.
29th to the 3rd, I mean the Monday to Friday ends on the 3rd of March.
So the Wednesday, Thursday would in fact be the 1st and 2nd of March.
Right.
Those who could make those dates, well, let's do it the other way around. Who could not, who already know that they cannot make those dates? Okay.
To repeat the question, is who is available on Wednesday and Thursday of March 2000? Sorry, the question is who is not available on Wednesday?
Which month?
March 1st.
1st
and actually, Tuesday the 2nd. I'll begin. I'm unavailable because those 2 days are, that week is basically Apricot, which will be in Seoul, Korea.
All right. So we lose two that are here. What about the 15th and the 16th? All right, we lose two that are here. Okay. Is it to go back to our original plan of the second of the first full week, which would have been the Wednesday and the Thursday of the 8th and the 9th, is there anyone here today who knows they cannot go on the dates we originally talked about? Okay, so it looks as though the board members present could all make the original schedule, and we'd have to consult with the board members not present and see if we can interpolate into the best outcome.
So please clarify the original schedule.
Would have been the 8th and the 9th of March.
What else? Two things. First, I know that these dates are not possible for being served. And second, earlier experience when we're trying, you know, these preparatory dinners or meetings showed that in the middle of the week is more likely to have agenda conflicts, that if you push that back to Friday or Saturday, for instance, and this also helps to keep the traveling cost down because you have over the weekend first in transocean flights. It's bad for family life, but it's 2 years, three times a year, by the way.
There are trade-offs for these, any particular approach we pick, and I'm certainly, on behalf of the staff, happy to do whatever the board is like. The reason why we have consistently stayed with Wednesday and Thursday is because we have affiliated bodies that wish to fill in around us, and we didn't want to make life any tougher for them than it already is, but obviously it's very important to get the board together. In other words, the board meeting comes first, and the other meetings have to, in one way or another, have to accommodate themselves. Mike, I suggest we keep the dates where they are, because that's what we decided to do. And then we'll work out the schedule beyond those. I think we changed these at the last minute is a mistake, because I presume everybody else calendared the event. Well, I think we have, with that comment and some others, a general feeling that we ought to go forward with planning around the 8th and the 9th, which a lot of people have made long-time commitments to. So the staff will proceed on that basis, and we'll work with Vince to see what latitude he has and if there's some ways for him to participate in my network. After all, we're in the network business. Right, that's quite possible. So I'd like to, if, with your concurrence, we have, keep going. Let's stay then with the inversion of the agenda. There is an action item for the board to appoint a search committee to begin
Would it be wise to look at the July meeting as well? Because I believe that
we
have the full year already dates for the July meeting, and then maybe we could settle that at this point.
I'd be happy to do that since our planning is tied to the INED conference, has been for some time in Yokohama. Then the dates that would be proposed for the meeting after March would be the 15th and the 16th of July in Yokohama. Is there anyone who has difficulty at this time with that?
Mike, there may be difficulties not only for myself, but for the public who should be attending the public forum to attend before the weekend before the INET because of the regional network workshops which take place before, and due to the time difference traveling mostly from the Americas to Japan, you would also be losing a day anyway over the weekend. So it may be more accessible for people to meet after the INET, the weekend, at the end of the INET.
I'm perfectly happy to consider the alternative at this time. Partly, our sort of informal agreement with the people that put on INET is we would not schedule on top of their conference, which normally runs through noon of Friday, in this case, Friday the 21st. Do you think that's correct, Jen? So the alternative then would be for us to go to the weekend of the 22nd and then Saturday and Sunday, the 22nd and 23rd of July. Is there board comment about before versus after?
Could we have a show of hands to make both and not make either?
Yes. We had two hands, I think, saying that the weekend before the 15th and the 16th was not possible. Is there anyone who knows now that the 22nd and the 23rd are not possible? Would someone that want to express a preference in addition to Alejandro's for after?
I thought we looked at that last time, but there's some reason why we scheduled this. I agree it wasn't to overlay the program there, but we also looked at this last time.
I think you're right, George. Jen, do you want to update us on your preference? I mean, after all, you're
we have discussed about the Sunday, Monday, then if that would conflict with their item posting, and so how does it Sunday is fine, but as he mentioned, there would be a possibility about.
Sorry.
This is the worst time of the. the workshop might be conflicting with this, but the forum has nothing to do with that, right? But both meetings, two of us are conflicting with the item board meeting, so what we should avoid the Monday. Otherwise, it could be all right. It has to be decided now because the room allocation is reserved for.
I'd just like to make one other comment about this, and that is that we might attract some INET participants to our public meeting that was before. The likelihood that any significant number of them would stay after is very low.
By the time the conference is over, people have other things on their minds. So, Alejandro, you want to revisit this preference business about before versus after? I mean, I think, Jun, to the extent that, that you know, there have been some room arrangements, so we have the benefit of what I'm very close to free space if we coordinate closely with the INET folks.
To conclude this, maybe we could look also to the possibilities in September for the third and possibly annual meeting.
Let's see, have we ended up then again reaffirming our prior dates of the Saturday and Sunday before, which are the 15th and 16th? All right. And so now we're up to the annual meeting, which generally has to be in the September-October timeframe. Hans has expressed a preference that because of other things associated with board changes and an expiration of agreements and so forth, that it would be in the board's interest to conduct that meeting in September, in other words, prior to September 30th, which this year happens to be on a Saturday. Linda.
I'm just wondering if the closeness of mid-July to end of September means that the staff will have had time to do work, so that we actually have something to think about. I think I understand Hans's point, and I think it's a very good one in terms of the continuity and the turnover and so forth, but we still have to have meat.
Are there other board views on this matter?
John? My comment is that it's putting a very bright pressure on the selection of the final at-large directors a little later with them, but that may not necessarily be deciding factor.
Well, I think the one thing that Hans is pointing to is the fact that by operation of the current bylaws, correct me, counsel, if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that, that the current appointed at-large directors leave office automatically on the last day of September, so that there would be vacancies in those positions until we had completed the second tranche of the at-large. So that would lose us six, according to the current plan, which of course might be changed, that would lose us six directors on the last day of on the first day of October. That doesn't seem on the face of it to be very desirable. Let me propose the following, that we calendar a meeting in September without regard to whether it's the annual meeting and without regard to how much work we agenda for that meeting.
But let's pick a date for it now.
Amado?
Last week is September.
All right. Well, let's be specific here. Is it going to be the 27th to 28th, the Wednesday and Thursday to be consistent?
Yes.
That's the proposal. We have an affirmative suggestion here for Wednesday and Thursday, the 27th and the 28th of September, not necessarily here in Los Angeles. Are there hands for people who know now they cannot make those dates? Okay.
As a matter of fact, I think that we have to plan two meetings after the July 1 for this year, especially because there are things like the DNS MOU that somehow put some deadlines on October that perhaps should be extended or not, I don't know, but probably by the end of October there are some significant decisions whether to move forward or not in some areas that are critical to ICANN. Would be taken, and then we need to rush that perhaps before the end of the year.
Well, I think we're all in agreement with you, and that is that, and particularly given that we would be receiving six new at-large directors in that time frame, we would try to hold a face-to-face board meeting as soon thereafter as we could, but that we need to have a little bit more certainty about our window so that perhaps we would
And I understand the pressure to get board meetings out there a year or two in advance, but with regard to that final meeting in calendar 2000, do you feel we need to nail that down now?
Anyway, there's no problem. It's the last week of September for me.
So it looks then as though no one that's here cannot meet on Wednesday and Thursday, the 27th and 28th of September, at a location to be determined. Done.
Thank you very much.
Are there four meetings a year or three?
I think we're leaving that open for action at the next meeting.
That would, the agreement we just made would have us, on a fiscal year basis, that would leave us with three meetings this year.
In practical terms, there's board meetings by phone when urgent business shows up. There's the executive committee. These are the all-hands meetings that have to be scheduled for these.
Maybe I'm going to one final question. For July, we have the date and the place. And I'm not very clear what's the case for March. We have, I think, the date.
We have not said
anything about the place, right?
The staff is going to go to work as soon as this meeting is over on confirming a location for that meeting.
It should be in Africa.
That was our intention.
So, Mike, maybe I can just say to the board, recognizing that there are also people listening in, that the staff will be very quickly posting requests for proposals for meetings, and anybody that wants to jump the gun and send me some emails suggesting meeting places or situations should please do so. Get that up on the website immediately.
And I've got several people who need to use it.
You have before you, we have a series of housekeeping resolutions on appointments of committees, and I propose that we deal with this en banc and ask that the staff read the proposed resolutions to us.
All right. What you have in front of you is a set of draft resolutions for the directors that are new to this. What the board does is try to capture the sense as best the staff can figure it out of what the board might want to do. Reduce it into language, but we edit these things in real time, so if you see any mistakes or changes or whatever, please just speak up. So the resolutions are as follows. The under the bylaws, the board has to elect a chairman and vice chairman annually. The board has to choose an executive committee, executive search committee, reconsideration committee, conflicts committee, and audit committee. In some cases, these committees are already created. We just have to name the members. In other cases, we have to pass a resolution to create the committee. The resolutions are as follows. As the chairman of the board, resolve that Esther Dykes is elected as chairman of the board to serve at the pleasure of the board in accordance with the bylaws of the corporation, and shall hold such office until a resignation, removal, or other disqualification from service, or until her successor shall be elected and qualified.
For practical purposes, I didn't say that I have to resign September 30th.
Operates automatically. Okay. I mean, obviously, you have to leave the board if you have to resign as chairman. And to vice chairman, resolve that Pinpar Wong is elected as vice chairman of the board to serve as the pleasure of the board in accordance with the bylaws of the corporation, and shall hold such office until his resignation, removal, or other disqualification from service, or until his successor shall be elected and qualified. As to the executive committee, resolve that there be and there hereby is, effective immediately, designated a committee of the board to be named the executive committee. The members of the executive committee will consist of the chairman of the board of the corporation and of such other directors, not less than one. As the board determines from time to time, each of whom will serve at the pleasure of the board. The members of the executive committee, in addition to the chairman, shall be Michael M. Roberts, Pindar Wong, Alejandro Costanzi, and Hans Kreienbrink. Meetings of the executive committee may be called at any time by the chairman or by not fewer than two other members of the executive committee. Further resolve that subject to applicable law and the bylaws, the executive committee will have and may exercise all the powers of the board in the oversight of the management of the business and affairs of the corporation, including without limitation financial matters. Further resolve that the executive committee will keep a written record of all actions taken by it and will report such actions to the board at the regular meeting of the board, next following the meeting of the executive committee in which such action was taken. I should say that the scanning back through the bylaws, we realized that the board had created an interim executive committee and not an executive committee. So we are simply reiterating the prior resolution language on the executive committee, just dropping the word interim. Sorry, Geraldine?
Is it just for some subjects which have been evaluated by the board each time, for example, or is it the general...
It's a general power to do anything that the board could do, except for the fact that they have to. It has to come to the full board for ratification at the next board meeting. So the executive committee is designed to deal with things where it's possible to get a quorum or 19 members of the board, much less a quorum together to act on it. Should I keep going?
I think the board could, by appropriate action, put that limitation. However, the executive committee in the bylaws has certain powers to act on its own with certain exclusions, such as the election of officers, amendment of the bylaws, and so forth, you cannot do. And that was felt to be appropriate scope that they could do. Of course, anything that practically is subject to review by the board, and reversal should the executive committee do something that the board disagrees with.
I just make the point that, for instance, when the executive committee exercises of the authority of the board to sign a contract, that there are occasions on which you would not want the other party to the contract to have to wait until the next regular scheduled board meeting.
So the fact that it has the language of subject to applicable law and the bylaws, for me, takes care of the question that I raised.
Okay, thank you. Other questions on it? Could you just tell me, you're referring to the bylaws on the executive committee?
Yes.
Which section is that?
Let's turn to council. Which bylaws?
I didn't find this. I'm used to seeing an executive committee tell that it doesn't have one bylaw.
Can you speak into the mic?
I can address that. It's not exactly what was said, but it's exactly the same effect. The committees of the board are set forth in Article 7, Section 1 of the bylaws, and they limit the board's ability to delegate to any committee of the board certain things. And specifically, it says the board may delegate to committees of the board legal authority of the board except with respect to filling of vacancies on the board or on any committee, the amendment or repeal of the bylaws or articles of incorporation, the amendment or repeal of any resolution of the board by which by express terms is not so amendable or repealable, the appointment of committees of the board or members thereof, the approval of self-dealing transactions, the approval of the annual budget, or the compensation of any officer.
Can we move beyond that item then?
Yeah. Moving on, the executive search committee resolutions are as follows: resolved that there be, and there hereby is, effective immediately, designated the committee of the board to be named the executive search committee, responsible for overseeing the search for chief executive officer and other officers as appropriate. Further resolved that Ben Cerf be and hereby is appointed chair of the executive search committee, that Jonathan Cohen, Hans Kryan Brink, and Alejandro Pisante Lee is hereby our appointed members of the Executive Search Committee.
Can I just make a couple of comments in terms of there's a search firm that we've already been talking to. There is some kind of a position description which I'm going to be circulating to the whole board, and incidentally we have to inform Vince that we've so honored him. And then we will be asking publicly, and especially all of you, to suggest candidates to the search firm, and the recruiter will be the person who coordinates this function and so forth, and then presumably the search committee will be the chief people to interview people. The goal for the search committee is to help manage the process, but the input, especially the candidates from anybody else, are going to be very welcome. This is going to be a really tough search for a whole bunch of reasons, including needing somebody that is multicultural, needing somebody that is willing to take a lower salary than he or she could probably get in any kind of private sector job. And Mike can certainly tell us all the difficulties that he's facing. So it's going to be, have to be.
I just wanted to make sure we understood the full charter of the search committee. The board actually, as a whole, I presume, elects the president. But a search committee has to go pretty far towards finding a satisfactory candidate, and it would be helpful to have it made explicit amongst us what we're, how we're expecting that to function,
yeah,
so that we don't get surprised.
Good
don't surprise time. Ourselves. Let's put it that way.
My assumption is that they will be doing the initial interviewing, but if it gets close, it may involve me.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is the board's input is welcome, but we're trying to reduce the burden. And the burden is on the search committee. The opportunity to get involved is for anybody in the board.
So in a way, what we're really expecting is the search committee will come and make a recommendation of the outcome of the search to the full board, and the full board really like the president. And one at that stage of the game would not expect the full board not to go along with the recommendation of the search committee.
Yeah, although
that's how you kind of expect it to function.
I envision it. It may end up with two candidates where, you know, I just don't know, and I don't want to pre.
Right.
I think we'll be lucky if we get one candidate, to be honest.
And I believe the search committee will report a full board of the activities of the search committee.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Only for the record, is to remark the importance to appoint a chief technical officer as soon as possible, in correspondence with the assumption of the coordination of technical functions.
Thank you. Are we all right to move to the next item?
The next item is the reconsideration committee. Resolved that Hans Kryan Brink be and hereby as appointed chair of the committee of the board of directors on reconsideration, that Ken Fockler and Amadeo Abrili Abril be and hereby are appointed members of the committee of the board of directors on reconsideration. Comment on it? Conflict committee resolved that Eugenio Triana be and hereby is appointed chair of the committee of the board of directors on conflicts of interest, and that Rob Rockdale be and hereby is appointed a member of the committee of the board of directors on conflicts of interest.
So, last night when we were talking about this, I suggested that there be one further committee created that I think is important, and that is that it be some kind of SO liaison committee, whereby members of the board who are elected from the various supporting organizations are charged with liaising with the various councils to ensure that there's good two-way communication and a harmonious development of the roles of each, so that this becomes clear. I think this is really important.
How many members did you envision? One for each SOA?
I would have thought four members would be sensible, meaning four of the directors that come from the SOs, one, so that not necessarily you have to liaise with your own people. We need some language to make sure that we don't create a situation where those directors are expected or perceived to be voting necessarily in one particular direction. The purpose is really for good two-way communication. I think that would be important.
Is there any comment?
I will suggest that we first wait and see whether there's a need for such a committee, because I would much further prefer, as I always understood, A, that the elected members are supposed to represent the interest of the whole of ICANN and the whole of the Internet, and B, I know of at least two supporting organizations that have understood that I have to report to the board, not to any particular board member or subcommittee of the board. So I would propose to keep it in mind, and if we feel either as a board or if a particular SO feels the need for it, then we will take it.
Well, the reason that, of course, I brought this up was specifically because the need had been expressed. I attended the DNSO meeting, and of course, was formerly on the News Council. And I think there is some real, I don't know what the right word is, concern or doubt or about what exactly the role is of the DNSO vis-a-vis the board. And also, I think I made it clear. There's no question that whoever is on such a committee is a member of this board and has a fiduciary duty to this board. It's only a function, in my view, of ensuring that there's at least one secure method of two-way communication. It's not that they will not or cannot speak to every other director or support the board.
I think in some sense if you make the DNSO liaison not someone from the DNSO, that actually makes that point very clear, and it helps create exactly what we want to do in relation to other people on the board and the SOs. Gives them a feeling that they're not speaking only to, quote, their directly. It's probably a good idea to give them a security.
Yeah, that's not, I wouldn't disagree, Esther, if the committee members were such, that's why I suggested four, that, somebody from the DNSO is a person who leads with the ASO, et cetera, that would be fun.
And that includes, in some sense, the at-large position.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hot.
Thank you. I would, and I do, support the recommendations made by Director Lockmeyer to wait and see how things develop. What I could imagine is that for the next meeting, we put on the agenda the issue of open support compensation in relation to various local corporations. So I'd make a point evaluate up to that level the operation of the company called the support of the
All right, thank you. I had a comment, but Amadeo.
For a short comment, while I agree with Jonathan in his suggestion, we have now come before us a whole set of committees with some, let's say, functional or procedural nature. I would like to come to this committee that has some ideas about some other material or subject matter or area that committee should be created, but so perhaps we need to work on one way by one management to come to with a concrete proposal of areas that need to kind of specialize in corporate litigation.
Let me comment on behalf of the staff that we're very aware of the fact that the SOs need better staff support than they've had. Of course, we've had a huge shortage of time to do that. And perhaps it's consistent with Rob Conley's proposal that some of the requests from the SOs for assistance from the ASON ought to be discriminated between those things that are appropriate for the staff to do and those things that are appropriate for the directors individually to do, so that I'd be comfortable going forward with an effort over the next 90 days to identify specific individual staff support to the SOs and then have you give us some feedback on whether you and of course, the SOs as well think you think that that's doing the job or something more formal is needed.
I'm kind of two minds here. I think liaison with the SOs is really important. One has to be simple. Yeah, it's the job of every director, and maybe the directors should just on their own initiative go talk to people from the SOs and pay them attention, but it may mean that is lost in the shuffle and that some kind of formal designation would be helpful. I don't know exactly what the problem Jonathan is pointing to is.
I think the suggestion might make some sense. Well, I think as I understand now, this would make sense, but I certainly think that if the staff liaised with the ESO councils, we got some sense of what they needed and what they wanted, and some feedback, at least at the next meeting, we have a clearer picture. I mean, my sense of it was that this was a good idea and it was desired, but if there's an easier way to do it, we don't need any extra committees. I just was trying to respond to the need that I thought I heard the next council meeting.
I think there's a little bit of a problem here that we ought to use some care with, and I think maybe it's behind what Rob suggested, and that is the bylaws make it pretty clear that it's the duty of the council to have a direct official tie to the board on the matters over which they have responsibility, and we wouldn't want to create a presumption somehow or other. There was a backdoor through a liaison that was either a substitute or some perversion of what was intended in the bylaws.
Meanwhile, some of us that certain issues have come up have said I'd be happy to write my past experience because that too, if it's an IT issue, work with the staff. And if it doesn't sort of flow with you, we can come back to this.
So are we of a mind to revisit this at the next meeting?
Andrew?
We have one last committee that needs to be appointed, the audit committee. Resolution to resolve that there be and there hereby is immediately designated a committee of the board to be named the audit committee, responsible for recommending the selection of external auditors to the board, receiving, reviewing, and forwarding to the board the annual financial report of the external auditors, and such other matters as may be brought to the board from time to time. Further resolved, Linda Wilson be and hereby is appointed chair of the audit committee, and that Greg Crew and Philip Davis be and hereby are appointed members of the audit committee. So, resolution that established a couple of committees posted to support certain matters, set up the membership of the executive committee, advise the chairman and vice chairman to be elected, and it's been my understanding of the central committee.
Audit committee, I think it's often normal in audit committees that they have some authority to inquire and not matters brought before it.
Just looking for text, just
I'm not sure that I'm giving the exact language, but if it were written in a way so that if that is not limiting on the audit committee, you want it to function independently. We're trying to assure accountability.
What if we amended the last phrase where it says such other matters as it may believe warrant its attention from
yes.
time to time?
The fact that the way we're working at the board. The last point. That is it finished with the audit committee? We need to vote on the resolution. Yeah, I think so.
Look at the screen. If you read the text, that's the revised one.
There it is, as it may be warranted to my last from time to time. So, anybody moves to.
You're moving the entire package of business.
All in favor, say. Opposed? That carries unanimously, and we'll move to. Are we ready to go back to the top of the agenda?
No, no, I just think that at the next board meeting, perhaps we ought to have a discussion about the way we remove or we change the initial members, because we will be replaced and there is a maximum on the number of people, and some of us probably will go until September, the end of September 2000. Some others will not be allowed to go for the end of the period, and we need to have a discussion about how we make this process. My sense is that probably there will be volunteers to resign.
Anyhow, when that happens, we obviously need to be sensitive to geography and other issues. But I prefer to let it be up to individual members' discretion and then try and do something more formal if the numbers don't work out. If 9 people try to resign, we have a problem.
Since we have a number of, as we said in the at-large session, a number of details about timing and so forth of elections, we obviously have to come back to that at the next meeting. Again, I believe we have one other housekeeping duty. We have to elect our president, secretary, chief financial officer, and technical if we had one. Thank you.
The bylaws require the board annually appoint its officers. So even though the board has just a few weeks ago appointed a vice president, general counsel, and secretary, we thought it makes sense to just do all of the officers in a package for the next year. And so there are 3 individuals covered by these resolutions and 6 officers. I'll read through the resolution. Resolved that Michael M. Roberts be and hereby is appointed as President, Chief Executive Officer of the Corporation to serve at the pleasure of the Board in accordance with the bylaws of the Corporation, and shall hold his office until his resignation, removal, or other disqualification from service, or until his successor shall be elected and qualified. Resolved that Louis Tuton D is hereby is appointed as Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary of the Corporation to serve at the pleasure of the Board in accordance with the bylaws of the Corporation, and shall hold his office until his resignation, removal, or other disqualification from service, or until his successor shall be elected and qualified. Finally, and least importantly, by a long stretch, resolved that Andrew McLaughlin D is hereby is appointed as Chief Financial Officer of the Corporation to serve at the pleasure of the Board in accordance with the bylaws of the Corporation, and shall hold his office until his resignation, removal, or other disqualification from service, or until his successor shall be elected and qualified. So with the exception of some possible reservations about that last resolution, those are the 3 that the staff recommends.
Discussion? So moved. Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That resolution carries, and the staff that continue to endeavor to carry out their duties. Could I point out, Dwight, that you no longer need to put interim on your correspondence?
Yes, the shorter my term becomes, the less interim.
So, is council now prepared to go to the top of the agenda?
We are.
And will you proceed?
Obviously the board has had the proposed agreements with NSI and the Department of Commerce before it for review now for some time. You've received a number of comments, written, email, and otherwise, and you obviously heard many comments yesterday. I think it would be fair to say that the range of comments, both written and oral, have raised a number of significant concerns from various participants, and there's also been considerable support for the overall concepts embodied in the agreements and a broad-based desire to move forward. As is painfully aware to all of you who have gone through these agreements in detail, they are complex, interrelated documents. Any changes that are made have potentially complicated ramifications and require some attention. As a result of the various comments, both prior to and at this meeting, we have been engaged in discussions with NSI and the Department of Commerce for some time on potential modifications, and very intensively over the last 2 days. I'm pleased to be able to report to you today that I think we have been able to reach agreement on a number of modifications with the other parties to the agreements that respond to many of and can argue all of the important substantive concerns that were raised both prior to this meeting and at the meeting. I think it's appropriate to recognize that this is the result of cooperation and hard work of all involved, and I want to specifically commend Jim Rutt, David Johnson from NSI, and Becky Burr from the Department of Commerce, who spent a lot of time with us over the last couple of days, and more relevantly, a couple of nights, getting us to where we are. I'm going to ask Louis Tuton to walk us through the specific modifications that the staff and council recommends to the agreements as you had previously seen them. Before he does so, I want the board to know and the community to understand the enormous contribution that Louis made to this result, in addition to being the man with the pen and the man who stayed up the latest. It was Louis' specific, quite creative suggestion for resolving the most difficult issue that we had to deal with, this question of prepayment and level playing field, that produced the agreement that we're going to recommend to you today. So I think if you didn't know it before, you ought to feel reassured by his performance on these issues that your legal affairs are in quite good hands. So I'm going to ask Louis to take you through these individual agreements.
Can I just add one other group that should be thanked, and that's all the people who gave their input over the last few months, specifically yesterday. And I'd like to commend the board for listening and responding to and just taking a great interest in all these issues.
It would be personally helpful. I mean, yesterday there was a point of 7 points that needed to be addressed.
I think I'll get into it.
Well, if I may, I'm trying to phrase your response so that I'm not being personally trying to characterize it.
Certainly, yes. I will do that. Let me just underscore Esther's comment that I do believe that the very good and productive public forum yesterday, in part because those who had comments organized the comments in a way that made them manageable in a circumstance where they could have very easily been unmanageable.
They were actual solutions rather than complaints.
Let me, first of all, just go briefly through the agreements in terms of identifying them, and then I will go through the 7 points and some other items, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit about how those points resulted in changes. There were 7 documents that had changes from the posted version as a result of the work of the last 2 nights. They are the registry agreement between ICANN and Network Solutions. Also, Appendix D to that agreement, which is the Zone File Access Agreement. You have both of those. The Registrar Accreditation Agreement, which is intended to apply generally to all registrars in the ComNet and org top-level domain, that ICANN accredits, the registrar, the transition agreement, which is an agreement that deals with the special problems of NSI in moving from its legacy registrar activities to becoming an accredited registrar. The registrar license and agreement, which is in fact not an agreement to which ICANN is intended to be party, but between NSI and the registrars, and also the terms of which are set by agreements with ICANN. And Amendment 19 to the cooperative agreement between the Department of Commerce and Network Solutions, and finally an Amendment 1 to the Memorandum of Understanding. I've not supplied you with a copy of Amendment 1 because it's exactly what's on the website, with one very simple change, and that is we corrected Mike Roberts' middle initial on the signature line. Very briefly, there were many points raised yesterday, but the discussion coalesced around seven of them, presented by a group of registrars. The first of those issues was perhaps the most difficult to resolve with Network Solutions, involving the prepayment program. And the Registrar Accreditation Agreement requires that all registrations before going active have a reasonable assurance of payment. And that is not the way that Network Solutions has been doing business, both at the retail level and its direct registrations to customers, or in its channel partner channels, where it sells through intermediaries. Network Solutions has been in the process of converting to a full prepayment model and has achieved that as to the retail sales, but has felt it needs, and I think substantial good reason, more time with respect to some of its channel partners because of notice requirements and its agreements with them and the like. The objection raised, however, was that the lack of a prepayment requirement is a special competitive advantage to Network Solutions, which might be manageable to the competitive registrars in the current competitive framework because Network Solutions has a set price it must charge, whereas the competitive registrars can cut price and compete on price. However, one of the features of this package of agreements is to remove the price floor, or price actually this is a fix that the government imposes as part of its arrangement with Network Solutions. After discussions with both registrars and with Network Solutions, we have concluded and obtained that both Department of Commerce's and Network Solutions' assent, and we believe it will be suitable to registrars, that this issue will be dealt with by providing that Network Solutions will be immediately relieved of the price fix, the price establishment. However, it may not take advantage of that with respect to any sale, any registration, as to which it does not require prepayment, so that any non-prepaid registration must be at the $70 price for 2 years initial or $35 thereafter. However, Network Solutions would be able to prepay, to lower its price by requiring prepayment on particular sales. And this actually, we believe, will cause them to be induced to move to a full prepayment model very quickly because there's an incentive for them to do it. I should say in addition, the time in which they must absolutely move to a full prepayment model is still 4 months. As I mentioned, that solution, after some long discussions and persuasion, was suitable to Network Solutions. second issue that was raised is the some members of the community, mainly registrars, expressed concern that it should be crystal clear that the prohibition that was put by the government on Network Solutions not to have any exclusive arrangements with its customers, principally partners, for a period of 18 months, beginning that last April, should be preserved. And they were concerned that mechanically the agreements might remove that restriction. We have, again, with Network Solutions, agreement made some changes to the language to make that, to clarify that point. I should say that that was a point that it was never the intention of any of the parties to remove that restriction. Third point raised by the community, again, primarily the registrars, group, the 3.7, was that a service level requirement should be incorporated into the agreements. In this area in particular, the registrars played a very constructive role in helping bridge this gap. Network Solutions did not oppose the idea of a service level requirement, but there is great difficulty in overnight coming up with how to craft such an agreement. And the group of registrars at NSI prepared some language for insertion in the registry agreement that contemplates that, that within the first 45 days after the registry agreement is signed, there would be a committee of registrars and Network Solutions registry people which would meet together and work out the details, and their language also gives an overview of how that committee will work and the major points it will address. The staff understanding is both the registrars and Network Solutions are satisfied with this solution. The fourth point was a request by the registrars to alter the approval mechanism for registrars of their contribution to the ICANN cost recovery. This matter was one of significant concern to the staff, and I know to Mike Roberts, because the proposal had implications which we concluded, as stated, would destabilize ICANN's funding mechanism and remove the stability that these agreements would give to that. In probing the matter further, it appears the staff, its principal concern is that the agreements by themselves would appear to give Network Solutions a very high level of sole control over ICANN's budget. And we believe that the transition agreement's assurance that Network Solutions will approve certain levels of funding in perpetuity, I should say. And secondly, that the recommendations of the task force on funding, which are directed carefully at ensuring that the whole group of registrars has a say in the budget-making process, adequately address this concern in a way that does not destabilize the financing. The fifth issue raised by the registrars list was that rsinternet.net should point to the NSI registrar, should not point to the NSI registrars, who is the database, and their proposal was that it should point instead to the NSI registry database. We have obtained Network Solutions agreement to do that within 21 days. The 21 days is more time than they say they technically need, but ICANN's staff's view and the Department of Commerce's view is that the confusion level in the community by doing it more suddenly would be outweighed by the benefits of it. There needs to be some chance for people to become acclimated. I should note that there's no perfect solution to this problem. It arises in large part because of the particular design of the partition between registries and registrars that was originally established for the SRS in Amendment 11. That results in a who-is system that has some deficiencies that other parts of these agreements are designed to address in the longer term. And I think the confusion factor might be a problem here. It's been a lot of the problem of who is so far. But the best proposal for the community is, I think, to go along with the registrar's proposal and just resolve it to the NSI registry database within 21 days. The sixth item on the registrar's list was that the SRS protocol should be accessible to future DNS participants. And in that regard, that I think has been addressed unilaterally by Network Solutions in a letter that Bruce Chobnik provided to the board of directors and particularly to Mike. They have informed us to publish the specification for the registry registrar protocol of the SRS as an informational request for comment to the IETF to place that that information broadly within the public domain. Finally, the seventh item is was a point of education that the registrars believe that steps should be taken in ICON-sponsored mechanisms to educate the public about the registrar service options available. Part of this, obviously, are things that I can and I believe the Department of Commerce can do. Some of them are already planned that are in the existing or the proposed agreement language and have not been removed, and that is that the internet.net website would be a web page showing the names of all the registrars with hot links so that the customer could go to that and have the full menu of places they could register a name. One measure that we did change in the agreements to restore that is that so long as Network Solutions continues to operate the rsinternet.net registry who is the server, it will have also a legend at the bottom of it stating that go to that website if you want to see where you can register a name. At the staff level, we intend to take other steps to enhance our own website, which incidentally does have a listing of registrars on it prominently on the front page, and also work with the Department of Commerce for other things that might be done to disseminate information, not only that there are other registrars, but as importantly, that they are legitimate and approved to register names. I should say there were a number of other comments, both at the public forum yesterday and also at the in the written comments, and many of those also resulted in some amendments. Let me briefly go through some of the high points by reference to the agreements.
Let me just say there are a large number of there are a significant number of ministerial typographical corrections, cross-reference corrections. We're not going to trouble you with those, but we've made a number of those corrections in this process as well.
Yes. One significant improvement, I think, that was made as a result of comments is a restatement of how both domain name, general domain name lookup and who is service generally are specified in the agreements. I am speaking expressly about the registry agreement here and specifically about Section 9, which is Section 9, which is directly on page 6. And you'll see there that it appears in several places. It happens in several agreements, is that to make explicit that the who is service to be provided must be both an interactive web page service so that World Wide Web browsers can go and look up a name, but also a 43 who is service to allow other web pages throughout the internet to interact with it so that consolidated who is services are presently available. In monitoring the current accreditation program, we have had some problems
some registrars only did a 43 GUID service. Other registrars only did a web-based GUID service. And in both cases, somebody in the community was seriously unhappy. Also, yeah, so, I mean, that's been fixed in several places in the agreement. Both are required, and it should assuage the unhappiness in that area, which was pointed out quite cogently in comments. Turning now to paragraph 17 and 18 of the registry agreement, which I believe is roughly page 9. Okay. This language, beginning with the second paragraph of paragraph 18, or within 45 days, is a slightly revised version of language proposed by the registrars. It goes from there to the end of what's now paragraph 19. It sets forth this 45-day program for coming up with a registry service level agreement. When that registry service level agreement is completed, it would then be made a schedule to the registrar license agreement between NSI and each of the registrars. And there was a sentence added at the end of paragraph 17 to implement that. Also, that's about the major points in the registry agreement itself, and perhaps I should move now to the registrar accreditation agreement, which has a number of enhancements to address concerns as to accuracy of contact data and the like. And it also has one change, the first change on page 3, definition 5, and here's the next one, definition B5. There was a phrase added to the end of that to fix an unintentional but a potentially significant technical problem to make clear that the uniform dispute resolution policy adopted by the board, not Santiago, is clearly a consensus policy on the grandfathered basis of that paragraph so that it would not be subject to challenge. I should note that one of the features of these agreements is they do make it important to complete the work of getting an independent review panel in place, because policies obviously cannot practically be challenged when there's no, as not consensus policies, when there's no IRP. And accordingly, what the agreement provides is that the registrar who might want to challenge on that basis does not need to comply with the policy until that's in place. The skipping over the who is thing, which is quite parallel, let me actually point out a mistake that was made by me in preparing these documents last night. I believe it should be on page 7 of your document. It's paragraph 6B. Top of page 8. Okay, good. I made a change there to add a sentence to change the pricing for bulk data, which was not agreeable to the parties. And it should go back to its old language. It simply said, registrar may charge an annual fee not to exceed $10,000 for set bulk access to the data. And then the second sentence drops out altogether. This had provided a fairly complex sliding scale in the proposal. It was not suitable to many parties, and ultimately the parties who wanted that change were mollified about it because of the presence of the 43, who is access, gave them the effective ability from these small registrars to get the data on a cheap basis in any event. In paragraph F, and there, on that same page, there were some changes to the opt-out provision, principally to emphasize that it's about personal data of individuals and to limit the ability of corporations to opt out, which the original language would have had and was felt to be inappropriate.
It also emphasizes that the opt-out is restricted uses for marketing purposes. So those points are in there. Page 11, in paragraph 7, J7A, third paragraph, which is the second paragraph. Okay, so you go over to page 11, second unnumbered paragraph on the page. A sentence was added to that which had been dropped by mistake after Singapore. Having to do with anonymous registrations and providing where there's not an anonymous registration, which is accomplished by having the domain name holder of record license to use someone else for the anonymous person. The holder of record has the option either of bearing the liability that may be caused by wrongful use, or alternatively, if it's consistent with its agreement with the anonymous user, turning the name over to the harmed party. I should note that the anonymous registration has been something that I think is a workable solution to a very tough problem that implicates all sorts of people with viewpoints that sometimes you can't anticipate ahead of time. But for example, one of the comments we got was from the Consumer Protection part of the Federal Trade Commission expressing concern that inadequate contact data and anonymous registration has, without this sentence, impeded their ability to protect consumers because they couldn't find bad actors. Okay, let me now turn to the transition agreement, which has some significant changes. It's also short. In paragraph 3, it's been lengthened quite a bit to address the resolution that was worked out involving the prepayment and price reduction. And as you can see, it now provides that, first of all, the 2J4, which is the prepayment requirement, shall not become effective until 4 months after the date of the accreditation agreement, provided, however, that it shall immediately apply to any registration made at a price different than that prescribed by the cooperative agreement prior to Amendment 19. It also provides an additional mechanism to inform the public that prepayment, even at Network Solutions, is coming to an end, that within 7 days after the date of the agreement, Network Solutions would issue a press release disclosing that fact, and it would individually notify all of its channel partners, which are the main users of this feature, to the same effect. The paragraph 4, there was just a clarification to make clear the term of that $2 million requirement that it was for so long as NSI remained an ICANN accredited registrar in ComNet and Core, and not afterwards. And finally, in paragraph 5, there was an addition of making explicit that Network Solutions approves the prospective today adoption by the board of the President's Task Force on Funding for this first year. Let me turn just very briefly, if I might, to the this agreement and Network Solutions logo on it. It's the zone biologics agreement. The only change in this was in paragraph 4 on the second page, the grant of access. This is an agreement that allows people who want access from Network Solutions and zone files to obtain that free of charge, or for paragraph 5, for a quarterly fee of $0. And in paragraph 4, there were some limitations on the purposes for which it could be used. The retained, and that was limited in some respects. There were fewer restrictions on how it could be used. But it continues to be prohibited to use it to spam and to enable high-volume automated electronic processes that apply to any registrar for large numbers of domain names, except as reasonably necessary to register domain names or modify existing registrations. That was, there were essentially two changes there, that the former provision only protected network solutions registrar bases, and on reflection we thought that was inappropriate if they were going to protect themselves. It's, of course, a registry agreement, so they should protect everybody equally. And the other thing is that there's some opening up of uses to protect some legitimate uses of the material. Registrar licensing agreement, and actually on this one you have your red line. The improvements were on page 2, the paragraph 2.3. It was reworded to make clear that both in the initial registration, or in all three cases, an initial registration, a renewal, or a transfer of name from one registrar to another could be done up to 10 years. But for very practical reasons, it was felt not appropriate to have more than 10 years sitting in the registry. Registrars are still free to sell longer terms than 10 years, but they just appointed they only should pay 10 years at once, and it's really mostly a technical issue. You'll see at the top of page 3 of 20 here that three parts were added to the submission requirements. This was just, although it looks major, it was in fact to conform to the requirements of the ICANN registrar accreditation agreement, so the two agreements were put into synchronization. And that's all I wanted to call attention on that one. Now let me turn, if I might, to Amendment 19, I guess the last of the agreements before you. On page 2, under paragraph 2A, you'll see the fix for the clarifying that clarification that the prohibition on exclusive agreements that NSI can't, as registrar, can't enter exclusive agreements for a period of 18 months. Those are termed other services within the structure of this agreement, and we felt that by changing the word this agreement to the cooperative agreement as amended, it clarified what agreement was meant. The very last part of it, I'm sorry. On the next page, in paragraph 3A, everything after the first sentence was added. And it, as you see there, it provides for that legend on every access to ARS Internet Net. Okay, it says, beginning within 21 days of this agreement and until NSI has completed such transfer, that's a transfer of the Internet comment or names to the Department of Commerce or its delegate, NSI shall provide port 33 WHOIS access to registry data through ARS Internet Net. Such WHOIS service shall return. Let me go to first sentence. What that is saying is that's implementing the pointing that to the registry rather than the registrar, so that network solutions registrar activities aren't unduly benefited. It then continues. Such WHOIS service shall return, in addition to the requested registry data, a message stating, quote, domain names in the ComNet and org domains can now be registered with many different competing registrars. Go to http://www.internet.net for detailed information. When the user does that, they will go to a web page that has a listing of all the registrars with hot links to those registrars. So that, those two reset, I guess, two of the points right there. Moving now to page 5, paragraph 6D is actually an implementation issue that didn't come from the comments, but from the terror of the staff when they realized what the nightmare they had created. The situation is that currently we are in the test bed, which is scheduled to expire tomorrow. Network Solutions is only authorized to operate the shared registration system to competitive registrars under the existing registrar and license agreement during the period of the test bed. So without a provision like Wayne Buff described, we would have not only have had to get new registrar accreditation agreements out to everybody, get them all signed, but Network Solutions would also have to get registrar license agreements out to all parties and get them signed all by tomorrow. So this is intended to address that and simply provide that formally there's an overlap period from now until November 30th in which people can operate either under the test bed regime of contract or under the new regime. Give us some time to say, to get documents to people and get them back. And I think, there's an important one on page 12, the other provisions. Other than a couple of typos that are fixed there, in, down towards the bottom of the page, G4A, you'll see that it makes explicit that price controls remain on Network Solutions as to any registration it makes where prepayment is not required. Specifically, the language would read, from the effective date of this amendment, NSI in its capacity as registrar for the registry TLDs may establish the charge to SLD holder one for registration of SLD names with respect to registrations for which NSI complies with the requirements of Section 2J4 of NSI's registrar accreditation agreement with ICANN, or for any other service provided by NSI as registrar at its own discretion. So this is removing the price control, but only with respect to prepaid registrations. And that somewhat length goes through the changes that were made to implement the 6 of the 7 points that the registrars wanted and several other points. As I mentioned, the 7 points we dealt with in parallel ICANN's financial aid.
If I could just sum up, obviously a lot of details here, and we don't expect you to have had the opportunity, since you only got the document while we were sitting up here, to read these through carefully, but I will represent to you on behalf of the staff that other than the things that we have described specifically to you today, there are no other changes in the documents from the way they were posted that are substantive. There are ministerial, technical, typographical, etc., but there are no other substantive changes.
Thank you very, very much. I want to just ask one question and open it to board comments, discussion, clarification, whatever. And that is simply for the record, and so that we understand the dynamics here. Have the registrars seen this? Are they happy with it? I mean, we understand they're not the only party, but clearly they're an important party.
We have discussed it in detail with them. Because of time limitations, and the fact that we couldn't even get the documents to you until the middle of this meeting, I don't know if they've received them, unless they've been handed out. Some of the registrars saw a couple of the documents, but I wouldn't characterize it as the whole picture by any means. I should say, because of the time limitations, I am a little bit nervous. There might be a couple of things which just a clerical mistake would be a cross reference, and I've tried to deal with that in the authorizing resolution, which I'll go into in a moment.
But there was some registry put last night.
Yes, we've had a number of discussions through this process with individual registrars and representatives of groups of registrars. I believe that these changes respond to most of and in a significant way to the concerns that they raised. I can't guarantees the board that every person out there is thrilled and excited and totally satisfied with this language, but I believe the language changes are responsive to the concerns that were raised.
Well, then let's have some Kendaris with discussion and questions.
Well, first of all, my thanks for the negotiation and the lengthy information. To try and simplify it for myself, there were several points that you mentioned yesterday by the registrars. You mentioned that the paper thing was addressed. One that I would like to point to specifically, which I felt was, in my opinion, the most important one, was point number six with respect to the SRS protocol, and that should be accessible to future DNS systems. And so it's my understanding here, and a clarifying question, that there's a letter to Mike to the effect that they will put out a specification to the ITS
mechanism. Yes, my understanding is that I've read the letter, that's what said, that it'll be published as an informational RFC for those who aren't familiar with that process. That's not a standard track of petition, but it is an open document.
Okay,
just to follow up on this, I did ask June Mariah to look at the letter to make sure that we understood the significance of the specific language in it. And June tells me that on the basis that this is a proper approach that you would normally follow and that it should accomplish the purpose that we sought.
And so as it changes over time, it will remain open. Well, that's it.
And let me just also point out that it commits or states their intention to complete the submission no later than the end of this year. And as I think Pindar was probably alluding to, the real importance of this is to permit a standard interface for future GTLD registries so that registrars don't have to cope with having different interfaces with different registries, and that time frame should be adequate to accomplish that goal.
Okay. I was right, as brief as possible, as to what came up with the agreement that happened yesterday. This is the very moment I'm really hanging here. The moment I'm really pleased, of course, back in Barcelona, following that through webcast, discussing with the Navy's consulate here. Because I don't like being forced to say what I have to say, and I don't like being forced to do what they have to do. But anyway, that's fine. That's my opinion. First, as I said yesterday, and I said today, that's before, I don't like to have hostile sentiment now, not following the reading of the Taylor Commission. So I'm not that interested in the Taylor Commission. No matter how we change the details, the agreement is not what I want. It is nothing that goes against the work of the negotiators of Adam Park, or Joe, especially coming from the work or the other negotiators, that it has been said many times that it's the best agreement that we could have given the circumstances. And that's absolutely true, and I subscribe. Where I still wonder is why the circumstances were artificially altered. That's the point we had as a departure point of the negotiation. And it really is that the United States government owes the political activity an explanation why they have all the inability to think to develop the problem. It's not NSI's fault. NSI is a legitimate company seeking legitimate commercial interest. That there was a failure of the required oversight for a long, long time, run us to the wrong place. Okay, so we went to the wrong place, we did everything we could. And said, well, you know, anyway, this is bringing petition to the register, not to the main end registration mark. This is what we want. And this allows us to move forward. As for the competition, you know, I have my opinion. And my opinion is that, I mean, using Eugenio's verb characterization, we are moving from monopoly, not still to competition, but to a special rights competition. There is a market with special rights. I have my own way that was well beyond the righteous process. But this is my opinion.
And as I said, yes, the house, he deserves the best. And, well, let's have a test. The only problem here is that this would require strong oversight from ICANN and Department of Commerce. Oversight from ICANN that has the power that it has, and it's not that much. Oversight from the Department of Commerce that is part of that United States government in the past has truly miserably failed to always that part of their responsibilities. I trust that they will really mean to do that now on, and I hope that this is true. The second question is that, sorry, could you summarize the first question?
I don't think
so. No, it's not.
We just began the second question.
Second point. Second, the first point was about do we have a competition model here before us or not? And I said that not perfect, but with lots of oversight, it can work. What I'm not completely sure is that the required oversight can be provided, given the past record of ICANN, Commerce, and NSI. But we can try to trust that. The second part is that we are externalizing lots of costs. Esther asked whether registrars were able to this, you know, last minute agreement or not. And she remarked that this is not the only part, that's perfectly correct. Even if the registrars agree, we have a wider picture here. And the wider picture is that we are asking the market, that is the users, to pay a high price. You know, 8 years is a high price for a model that, this is my main point, a model that cannot work easily. We have registry out of the control of the registrars and the non-profit running, a light registry with heavy duties on the registrars that somehow are acting as a registry for many of the data. We have many problems in the who is in this light registry, heavy registrar model, that even if they go in favor of the registrar's interest, I don't believe they go in favor of the intellectual interest. And again, as we are multiplying, you know, the sources of problems with this divided system with heavy registrars, we will need to multiply the need from oversight from ICANN and Commerce. And again, I'm not completely sure. But anyway, as I said, when I was presented to this here yesterday morning, I'm not here because of, you know, some people thought that my intellectual capacity abilities are beyond any possible thought, or that because my natural instinct in assessing things is really remarkable. I'm here because beyond my own opinion, I tend to listen. And I've been listening to the community. And the community tells me overwhelming majority that we need to accept that. And we need to trust in the market. There was a test here. There was a test being played. The test was the registrars, for instance, asking for 7 points. Not the most important, simply the points that could be negotiated in a short term, and just to see where the willingness down the road is to accept that this can be implemented in the right way. And I just want to thank NSI for accepting to play that, to show that even if the agreement is not perfect, they are amenable to further discussions and agreements. And simply, I would say that even if deep inside me, I think these are not the agreements we should sign, I accept that to have the trust in ICANN, NSI, and DOC, and I accept that this problem is the only thing we can do right now.
Thanks. I think Ken and John and George and Geraldine, let me encourage you to be somewhat briefer.
My initial reaction on these documents was maybe to take Keith's root out as a new boy and seeing, but as I looked at them and thought about my own experience with them, I have been following this process, and even my experience on the White Book panel, that into a large number of these activities, I've heard all the expressions of concern about the process on the legacy process. I think we have the ability to address, even monitor, some of the concerns. One that stood out to me
to go in order now because we're going to go in order around the room for people who have their hands raised. So AOC is next to it.
Only very, very short comment. It's called information to the reference page. Okay, look. The transition, the transitional process, open competition, you go from the exclusive license to the about the readiness to the maximum commercial maximum justice. A normal transitional process. We know that we are not going from closed market to open competition market. Secondly, I point out that we are talking about negotiation. People representing item for negotiation. We are not a regulatory body. We are negotiating an agreement, including many commercial parts. It means that every part, in my experience, every part gets the second benefit. I consider that through the process of the land negotiation, we produce, our negotiations produce very significant benefits. In particular, I refer to the improvement related to the service level agreement. In the creation, particularly the creation, the constitution of the service level agreement working. Very important to create certainty about the characteristics of the service level agreement. Saying that, I congratulate the negotiators, and I consider that we must be successful.
Thank you. Great. George.
Well, after listening to this, I can be really sure. Yes, I agree with Amadeo's concerns, and I also agree with Washington and the CEO coming out because there wasn't in the negotiations last night.
Level requirement group that is going to be working. Is that an ICANN body, a separate body? What's its relationship with ICANN?
It's not a subordinate body of ICANN. For practical reasons, my anticipation is that the group registrar will come up with a roster. Because it's relating to information in the registry, can't help the ICANN to have the ratification and the resolution that is presentable to the member says might say, okay, so the group is going to help.
So the efficacy of whatever they come up with is not subject to review by the ICANN?
That's not correct. The language that ministry paragraph 18 area. And it does contemplate approval by ICANN for the zone. And the final part says that's approval.
after it is approved by the SLA Board and ICANN, the registry and service level agreement shall be incorporated into the NSI register and license agreement referred to in Section 17. So, again, the vision is that would be not accepted by ICANN staff in reviewing it without, because the point is to get it in place quickly in a 45-day time period.
I have so much confidence in our president's staff that I think that this is probably acceptable, but I am concerned because this has been worked out with a small group of registrars, and there are interests in how well this functions. So I think I would just recommend to the president that he think about to what extent some of this might be posted, so that we don't inadvertently step here and put something in place that we didn't have to live with because we just weren't smart enough to get through this process. But I'm really very pleased to see the service level requirements come into being, and I don't want to be obstructionist at all to this big game.
Just to make you feel better, any registrar will have the opportunity to comment on this because there's a specific provision in there that the draft will be distributed to all accredited registrars, and they'll have a period of time to comment on it. And the other point that ought to be raised here is that in this particular issue, on these particular set of metrics, I think it's the fact that the interests of the registrars are totally aligned with the interests of the users of the Internet. Their interest is in getting accurate, satisfactory performance from the registry, and that's obviously what the Internet users would want to look for.
Great. The other comment that I wanted to make is that I've been concerned all along that we were aspiring to would be adhered to this contract. I think they are. I think what Amadeus has been telling us in the beginning was been telling us that our vision is somewhat broader and more sophisticated, but we're taking an important step, and this important first step is pretty sound. So I'm really ready for it. Thank you.
I must admit the negotiation up to the last moment is the finding an agreement, which I believe is very important for the stability and the development of the industry. With this agreement, we will get stability and recognition. And I will support the agreement. But I would like to add that I do hope that all concerned faces of this will go to work and start fighting, and stop fighting, and start cooperating. Because I believe that these agreements, they relieve a number of uncertainties. They give certainties upon which we may state that not every element is perfect for everyone, but it's clarity. And I do hope that NSI, Department of Commerce, ICANN, but mostly the Internet community, will accept this as a firm, basis and platform to work on.
Thank you. Let's see. Greg? We're approaching you.
I'm going to be very quick. I just wanted to say personally that I felt that it offered kind of a quiet challenge to NSI yesterday to do the right thing, to be big enough to step up and make difficult decisions at the last moment, and to become an important and a powerful member of the ICANN team. I think it's done that. Not to be noted and appreciated. secondly, since it's my job to congratulate people today for some reason, I just wanted to say something about everybody's thanking the negotiators. I just wanted to kind of be a little more specific. For any of you who are lawyers, and there are a few this year, I want to tell you last night that when most of us went to cocktails and then went out to dinner and then probably got a decent night's sleep, after drinks, David Johnson, Louis Tutton, and Joe Sims probably spent the whole night in a room that was probably too hot, too frustrating, too angry, and probably argued, deliberated, and left the room and walked around. And when they finished, after many, many hours, I'm sure, trying to find compromises, they then all had the privilege of running off to their respective offices and typing out things, drafting them, reviewing them, retyping them, calling each other, and probably got no sleep at all. So when I say thank you, guys, I mean it.
Thank you, Jonathan. For those who don't know, Louis actually speaks about twice as fast normally. Greg.
I would like to say, I think it indicates the value of the open discussion session that the board has when it comes to its meetings and its decisions. I think it demonstrates the effectiveness of that process.
Thanks. Any other comments here? Geraldine, then Pindar. And then I think remember, there's a few other items on the agenda after this.
Objectives that were remembered yesterday. We had to introduce competition in this area, and we had to be self-finance campaign. And the status of the situation yesterday was that the powers left to NSI were very big, and the competition was not satisfactory. And at the same time, we had private corporations, we could have great concerns because the registrars of the CCDLVs were not satisfied with what we were proposing, so we did not have the certainty that there was a working person or an offending person for us in the future. However, we hope that the NSI would say something. So the situation now, I hope, is better. I understand that the registrars now can have satisfaction for most of the elements they have lost. I think it's a very good achievement to have come to agreement between these parties. I think we have still a lot to do about the rest is not completely settled. And on all of this, I think it's a good and big step. However, it's very difficult to work in such a way. I'm not able to see whether all this stuff is satisfactory in 1 minute. However, I see that this has been a great job. And perhaps one thing to recommend is that we have to work to create the means for all our parties to work together and to be satisfied ongoing agreement. But also we have to take advantage of what was said yesterday by as soon as possible take control of the group server so that the situation is really in place, so that we can exercise our functions. The last point is that we have to be also, we have to complete the last element for our objective, which was the internationalization. And I think that's true all that has to be discussed in the original one.
I'll try and keep it as short as possible. I mean, I heard people expressing their opinions, and I thank them for that. To begin in Ken's style, which was to say that when we initially approached this new board director, and I was speaking also to look at this and to abstain, reject, or what have you. And to build on Amadeo's second point, which I believe was that he appreciates that at the end of the day it's going to be a trust process and that NSI is actually doing something. Substantively, I would say that I'm very pleased with the
concessions to do with the who is and the SRS protocol. But having said that, I believe it is, I don't believe it is appropriate for myself as an individual to vote on this, and I would feel more comfortable to abstain. Also a procedural issue, which was, if there is, I'm assuming there will be a vote, there was a point mentioned with respect to the transition agreement, point number 5, which relates to the funding issue, and that is, I think, to be discussed. The technical speaking, you can't vote on this until we discuss that. Is that correct?
Is it kind of subject to vote or something?
No. What the resolution that I will suggest to the board will do is a couple of things. Authorize the president to sign an agreement. The agreement would not actually be entered until it would be taken action to ask for some funding.
Thanks for the clarification. And now the president.
Well, I just wanted to make the comment that I think the struggle that we've been observing here is with our various individual collective judgments as to the balance between how public interests and private interests are being served in the evolution of the domain name system, the Internet. When the history of the DNS from approximately 92 forward is written, there will be plenty of opportunity for us to identify mistakes that were made. Balances that shifted in a direction that we're unhappy with. The challenge in front of us now, however, is to admit there were mistakes made and look to the future on a basis of less opportunity for mistakes and more collective judgment that we are, in fact, on the right course. I'm very much persuaded by Joe and Louis' cogent presentation yesterday, by the public comments, and by the work of many people that have been involved in this, that there is a recognition that we have to continue to balance public and private interests in this area, that it's going to be a challenge, and that an open process of the type that we've been through here over the past month or so is the right way to do that. And so I will affirmatively endorse the agreement.
Thank you very much. Before calling for the resolution to vote and so forth, I want to add my voice to those who are going to vote in favor of this agreement with genuine reservation. But the world isn't perfect. I agree with some of them David's concerns. However, our task here is to take what we were handed, both in terms of our specific mission and the imperfect world we're in, and move to make it more fair, more open, more level, but at the same time, not to stall progress. And it's very important that we do what we need to do and get on with it. There are lots of other challenges. You new board members were not elected to sign this agreement and then retired. There are many other interesting challenges facing us as a supporting organization and the community at large. And finally, I want to mention that after this is over, Mike Daniels, after the board meeting is over, when it's properly closed and adjourned and everything, Mike Daniels is asked to address us. Well, I know maybe somebody from the registrar will as well. But I really do want to thank everybody formally for the attention, energy, blah, blah, blah. And with that, I will spare you further thanks and ask Louis to propose a resolution, please.
I may not have been as clear as I would have liked to be, and that's probably because of my lack of sleep, so let me just clarify what I was trying to say before, which is, procedurally, I believe I should not vote.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I would like to say, having said that, that my concerns with respect to the agreement, and in my interest that the domain name issues the law, and in my interest that I can begin to also address other issues in the ASO and PSO and at large, should I be party to this since the beginning, I would endorse the agreement, but I will not vote on it.
Great. That is very clear and, I think, an elegant statement of...
Technically speaking, the separation of the registrar and registry functions, access to the who is, and putting the SRS into the IETF effectively in the public domain addresses my concern.
I think all of us feel substantive changes were made on specific issues that were troubling. Maybe I shouldn't speak for everybody, but you guys did a superb job. Thank you very much, and now you can tell us what we're going to vote on.
Yes, Ben, could you put it up on the screen? And I see there's a typo in this, which...
Back to the drawing board.
Well, which will enforce one of the features of the resolution itself. Whereas the board has been presented with proposed agreements among Network Solutions, Inc., the United States Department of Commerce, and ICANN, consisting of a registry agreement, a revised registrar accreditation agreement, an NSI registrar transition agreement, a revised NSI registrar licensing agreement, an Amendment 19 to the NSI U.S. Government Cooperative Agreement, and Amendment 1 to the Memorandum of Understanding between ICANN and the United States Department of Commerce, and attachments to those documents. Whereas the drafts of these documents were posted on the ICANN website and public comments received, both in writing and in a public forum held November 3, 1999. Whereas based on the comments, various changes have been made to the posted documents, resulting in the agreements now before the board, it is resolved that the president is authorized to sign the agreements to which ICANN is a party in the form presented to the board with any minor technical corrections and modifications he determines appropriate. The word as shouldn't appear there. And further resolved, the president is authorized to take such actions as appropriate to implement the agreements. So just briefly speaking, it authorizes Mike to sign these agreements with any... Yes, word as should be out. And it can accomplish that. The very caveat in which that typo appears is the reason for the caveat to give Mike a little room to, in consultation with me, to fix any cross references and the like that may have been missed. We expect that signing will take place in the next few days. And then the second part of the resolution that is authorized to take actions appropriate to implement the agreements are such things as approval of the result of the working group on the service level agreement and so forth.
Anybody want to move to?
Second.
Okay, I'd like to take a vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
All abstaining? Anyone opposed? Oh, sorry, I forgot to vote in favor. Anyone opposed? Okay, it carries with one abstention. Thank you very much. Amadeo has a comment, and then we need to move on to the next few remaining items on the agenda.
There is a suggestion here to the president and to the staff that when this SLA working group does the work, it also be presented to the DNSO as, you know, as urgently as required, that be presented to the DNSO for review before coming to the board. And the second thing is,
Can I ask that people who are observing observe and not talk until they're out of the room? Thank you.
Probably they are surprised that I voted in favor. Anyway, just let me say that now that I vote in favor, I have two main goals. Make sure that this evolves into more robust competition, and especially that ICANN goes in the right direction to get the recognition from the United States the government to be the policy body for these areas. And these goals, I can assure that I won't be as circumspect as I have been here the last 2 days.
Thank you. We're now going to move on to the funding task force recommendations.
In front of you're calling on me to do
the funding task force.
In front of the board now is a draft resolution on funding, which is both a follow-up to the resolution that you just passed and deals with the task force report on its merits. Ben, if you could put my computer up on the screen. I think the easiest thing to do is just to read through the resolution. Whereas the President's Task Force on Funding completed its draft final report on October 30, 1999 and released it for public review and comment on October 31, 1999. Whereas the draft final report was reviewed and discussed at the ICANN public forum on November 3, 1999. And whereas the members of the task force have indicated that the draft final report represents the consensus of the task force and should be treated as a final report, it is hereby resolved that the board adopts for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 1999, transition budget. The recommendations set forth in the final report of the President's Task Force on Funding, including the improvements to the ICANN budget process, the global allocation of budget contributions, and the specific funding formula applicable to generic top-level domain name registrars. Further resolved that the board directs the President to implement the recommended funding formulas applicable to generic top-level domain name registries and registrars by incorporation into the applicable registry agreement and registrar accreditation agreement. And further resolved that the board directs the President to implement the final report's recommendations as to other categories of registries to appropriate contractual relationships. I should say, and finally resolved that the board acknowledges the work of the task force on funding and expresses the board's appreciation for the time and effort which the task force devoted to this matter.
We discussed this fairly extensively yesterday in the presentation and public comments. Are there any questions which members of the board have about interpretation of the resolution?
No, sorry, there was a young lady from Germany who mentioned the test funding within the UGRP. Was that ever addressed?
If, I think, consistent with the task force's rationale, if it became the case in the future that that on some kind of a consensus policy-making basis that activities within the UDRP somehow or other ought to generate an income stream to ICANN, that income would fall under one-time special project funding and not under income to support continuing activities. I think it is the intention, and I'm pretty sure Louis was clear about this, but let me restate it and let him speak to it, that ICANN is not a party to the operation of the provider system. There are three parties to those. In fact, registrars are not parties to the operation system. There is a complainant, and there is a person complained on, and there's a provider. Now, it's conceivable that ICANN might end up being injected into that, but it seems at the moment pretty unlikely. Lloyd, would you like to comment?
Yeah, a couple of reasons I think that explain the lack of consideration by the task force on funding. First of all, the UDRP is not yet implemented, so it's in its infancy. Secondly, without intending to prejudge how it might come out, there certainly would be arguments against trying to derive revenue from that, and that is because the point of the program is to provide a streamlined, low-cost mechanism for people to resolve these disputes, and that would run against that general policy. You may find that, nonetheless, cost recovery is appropriate, but I would think that question ought to be considered by the task force for the next year's budget.
Okay. I think there was a suggestion of two components of clarification and change, perhaps a definition of little n and big N in the formula. Did we consider that?
The state of play on that is that this resolution endorses the task force report as it stands. Network Solutions suggested that we might want to reconsider the definition small n, large n. They were the only member of the task force that was of that opinion. And the position I took in conversation with Network Solutions yesterday was that at a minimum, the rest of the task force needed to be specifically further consulted about it. And that beyond that, if the reinterpretation of the formula was going to make a significant change in the distribution of the revenue responsibility as among the GTLQ registrars, then there ought to be an opportunity for the registrars collectively to have some deliberation about it so they can do that.
Okay. Right, and in discussions last night, the NSI folks said that they recognized their burden of persuasion and were willing to carry it over into next year's budget discussions, that to persuade everyone that their view of this is fairer than the view that the other task force members, registrars in particular, had of the question.
Good. So let me point out that it was NSI's point of view that inequity, in their opinion, would occur not this year, but next year. Since this resolution is confined to the mechanisms for the current fiscal year beginning last July,
I take it that they have, are now prepared to argue their case on the merits with respect to the next fiscal year.
Okay. Yeah.
For this year, the actual dollar differences are extremely, would be extremely small.
Yeah.
For this year.
Another further discussion? And we have a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vote. Thank you.
Yes, okay, we're going to do at-large membership first by our newly appointed chief financial officer. I'm reappointed, sir.
Greg, would you wish to introduce this? Chairman, the presentation I made earlier covered the work of the board and its subordinate bodies, particularly the MAC, on preparing for the establishment of a membership to elect the council, and the fact that bylaws had been prepared for that purpose, and that we had received a grant from the Michael Foundation. And also that we had determined to establish an implementation task force to assist the chief executive to work going forward, and these draft resolutions to put an authority to instruct the chief executive. Perhaps, Andrew, would you like to read the resolutions?
Sure. The resolutions are as follows. Whereas the corporation has now received a significant commitment of funding from the Markle Foundation to support the launch of the at-large membership selection program. Whereas the Markle Foundation grant funds will permit ICANN to hire a dedicated at-large membership project manager and to provide the staff support necessary to the work of the membership implementation task force. It is now resolved that the board gratefully accepts the Markle Foundation's grant and directs the president and CEO to promptly acquire appropriate staff and resources to carry out the tasks set forth in the grant request. Resolved that the President and CEO is directed to convene a membership implementation task force which shall generate and implement strategies for outreach and recruitment of a broad and numerous membership that is globally representative of the Internet user community, design effective membership authentication and online election procedures, and undertake such other membership implementation responsibilities as may be assigned to it by the Board of the President. Resolved that the President's staff are directed to post by November 19, 1999, a public call to the ICANN community for nominations and expressions of interest in serving on the task force. And resolves that the board notes that many comments on the at-large membership structure and implementing bylaws adopted by the board and directs the president and staff to analyze the comments and to post for public review and comment a set of proposed responsive amendments to Article 2 of the bylaws as deemed advisable prior to the board's next meeting. This last resolution is designed to capture the fact that a number of board members and a number of people in the public have proposed some small modifications, some large modifications, and it's a recognition that this is a work in progress. And so basically, the board basically directs the staff to pull it all together, present it in a comprehensive and understandable way, and then get public comments on it prior to the board's next meeting.
And to hire somebody to help make it happen.
That's the earlier resolutions, exactly.
Louis, it's probably a clarification.
Yeah, it is definitely a point of clarification. Andrew, what's meant by prior to the next board's next meeting?
It's a good question, because it sure doesn't mean the board's next teleconference. why don't we replace that with something a little bit more flexible? I'm wondering what the staff view on schedule of this is. The staff thinks that it's
we affirm the board's meeting.
Well, this is actually, this should be done in the relatively near future, maybe 60 days or something like that.
Yeah. Perhaps Humphrey views that I think although that there are some modifications needed in the bylaws, I think they need to be made until we are at the stage of starting to implement that implement. I would believe that having this effective by the March meeting has currently scheduled. And it also gives time for possible additional methods to come out of the work of the implementation task force.
Let me be very clear. This doesn't schedule board action on the amendments. This schedules the staff deadline for posting a report that summarizes the proposed changes from board members and others to the bylaws.
What do you feel comfortable?
60 days.
May I suggest a slight restructuring?
that perhaps the requirement should be that the staff post it in 30 days and not specify the ending period point for the comment period at this time until the board moves a little further down the road. The schedule becomes
30 days is fine. We can get something pulled together.
I just sincerely doubt with the amount of work that the board is giving the staff to do that that's a feasible goal. So let's talk about the objective.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at 30 days, it actually ends up in Christmas time. But at the same time, we want you, and this is not the resolution, that there should be some sense of urgency, because I think there is, and I think the Markle people will help foster that. Cheryl thinks you wait.
I don't think that the staff could provide for just the position, the list of proposed modifications before the task force, or to have the task force use it, even though the board will not work on it before next March, it would be very useful. I think that we cannot set the task force start without taking into consideration all these elements. So I suggest that the last result be put before the task force creation. If you accept that it's the ideal question.
Yeah, I'd like to second that. I don't detect any consensus at the staff level or in the public comments on amendments at this time. And I believe that the appropriate thing, if you wish to charge some effort in this item, is to commission a staff report on where we are on follow-up amendment action.
Well, maybe a staff report with input from the IGF, whatever you want to call it.
Well, one thing that we could do then is we could just say, instead of post for public review and comment, instead of proposed responsive amendments, why don't we just post it to say a staff report with the understanding that it'll include input. And I think to Geraldine, what I can say is that at the staff level, we will charge the task force with a list of questions that we can circulate and agree on amongst ourselves beforehand. But I just wanted to give us a sort of backstop that we know one big work item that's going to happen prior to March is a comprehensive staff report on what ought to be tinkered with. I'll solicit the input of the board and others, but let's just set in stone that there will be a staff report by the end of January, and that there will be some, I can say informally, there will be some additional work product prior to that, both in terms of charging that. I'm not sure if that's responsive, Joe.
I think we're getting to the point where we're ready to go ahead.
This is with respect to the whereas. I believe there should be some language to clearly indicate that whilst we're receiving money from the Markle Foundation, it has in no way will impact our policy.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we would have done it without their money, except we wouldn't have had the money to do it.
No.
Their money didn't drive the... Can anyone suggest some wording? Linda.
Corporation is now ready to support the launch, ready to launch the at-large membership and lecture program, and whereas it has received many countries in the market.
I think Andy's already working on
I've lost the thread. What?
I thought you were typing.
Sorry, the thread here was that, you know, whilst Markle has gracefully provided seed funding for this, that should be a statement or some language to the effect that it doesn't affect our policies.
Okay. Linda does actually have some wording then. Why don't you read it slowly?
Whereas the corporation is now ready to launch the at-large membership and election program and has received funding from the Markle Foundation, which enables this to proceed.
Let me make a proposal that Greg and Andrew and Louis work on fixing this while we discuss ad hoc and then go forward with Hans introducing the resolution on ad hoc.
Okay, thank you. I would like to remind the board my presentation yesterday during the public forum.
reminding ourselves that further to the resolution in Santiago, we published a draft charter for public comment and review on the 21st of October. It was a very constructive discussion. There was a further meeting this week, resulting in a revised draft, which was could be reviewed yesterday during the public forum. I note that during the forum we did not receive any comments, so I take it that there is broad consensus in the internet community on the charge for the ad hoc group. So I put before you a draft resolution, where the, I guess, staff is busy revising another resolution. I will read it to you. Whereas on the October 21st, 1999, Director Kreinbrink proposed for public review and comment a charter for an ad hoc group to be formed pursuant to Board Resolution 9979. Whereas the proposed charter was discussed and revised at an open public forum on November 2nd, 1999 in Los Angeles. Whereas a number of constructive criticisms, comments, and suggestions were made by a wide range of interested parties, and whereas the proposed charter was revised and redrafted and presented to the ICANN Public Forum on November 3rd, 1999, it is now resolved that the Board endorses the proposed charter for the ad hoc group and directs that it be included with the minutes as section A, and further resolved that the President and CEO working with Director Kreinbrink is directed to establish a dedicated ICANN public comment forum on the ICANN website and will invite a small editorial group to coordinate and contribute to the work of the board.
So is there a board discussion on subjects on the resolution? Brenda?
I'd just like to make a general comment that we often acknowledge that we have received constructive suggestions and criticism, but the real point is not only to see the budget considered. And I think making that more explicit will be more honest about what's really happening here and make it clearer to our constituencies that this transparent mechanism is an interactive one.
I think that's a very good point. The fourth whereas says the proposed charter was revised.
I'm trying to make a closer connection to the fact that constructive criticism is given and is considered. You can consider it and you may or may not revise it. That would be also, I'm actually trying to make a suggestion for a generic, whereas if we put in our resolution that addresses this issue of receiving criticism and considering, then whether or not we revise it depends upon what we think.
Well, would you like to revise this one, or would you like to tell us to make sure we do it the next time?
I'm happy to tell you to make sure to do it the next time.
Thank you very much. So I think, Virginia.
Yes, it's only to comment that it is good that the resolution attach the new charter comment as the purpose of the ad hoc group could be expressed in one line. It would be possible to put the scope of the ad hoc group must be focused on identification, etc. I don't know if it's the same, but could be more clear the resolution if we put, because the mandate is clearly focused on identification of the explanatory variables, etc. And the second thing is a practical matter is to encourage funds to set up this editorial group as soon as possible.
We have a small process issue here, and that is the staff is entirely happy to modify two resolutions in a row, but we can't do that with both of them simultaneously. So we're now at a point where if the board would like to revise the ad hoc resolution, we have to stop and go back and finish the other one and then come back to this. So are you actually asking for a revision to this?
No.
Okay.
I'd like to move it.
No.
The motion on ad hoc has been moved by George Montgomery.
Seconded.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. That resolution is adopted as proposed. And we're now, let's see, I think I would like to
Okay, folks, call in the press. I now have some additional resolutions which were not anticipated in the agenda, and they are the following. I think you have them in front of you. They're called draft resolutions for depreciation. And let me make this clear. These are in the place of any kind of string or obligation. They are thanks to our funders who get nothing in return other than thanks for depreciation of disability. And with that in mind, let me just read this quickly. Resolved, this board gratefully acknowledges the financial backing of financial contributors, including listed contributors to these supplies, who generously support us in the ICANN process and make ICANN success possible. Second, resolved, this board gratefully acknowledges the critical financial support of Precom Corporation, Deutsche Telekom, and MCI WorldCom, which is over here, and direct the President to convey the board's thanks and appreciation to the appropriate offices of the corporation. Resolved that the board gratefully acknowledges the contributions of the Advisory Committee on Independent Review and thanks them for their final report. And finally, this is going to be up on the screen in a moment. It's not in your printed copy. Resolved that the board gives a big thank you to Ben Edelman, Meg Smith, John Wilbanks, Jonathan Dittrain, Diane Cabo, and the rest of the First Defender team who gave up a week of their lives to come to work in rescue very hard for ICANN to provide real-time webcasting and remote participation. Here they come.
I have a couple of revisions. I'm trying to capture and make it clear that the Markle Foundation, make it clear to the community at large, that the Markle Foundation's funding does not impose substantive policy constraints on ICANN, that it funds tasks but not dictates policy, and so the board needs to be able, the board obviously wants to retain the flexibility to revise and tinker with these bylaws, maybe even consider wholesale revisions in the coming month or two. So what I've said, what we've done is Greg Crew and Linda Wilson's help, we've added an initial whereas that frames the resolution saying, whereas the board has adopted a set of bylaws setting forth the policy framework for ICANN at-large membership structure and election. And it goes through the remaining whereas as they were. And then we've struck mention of the Markle Foundation directly from the resolution. So it says now, the first book resolved says, resolved that the board directs the president and CEO to promptly acquire appropriate staff resources to carry out the tasks necessary to implement the board's membership bylaws and resolutions.
Does that mean we omit all mention of Markle?
No. We thank Markle.
Okay, great.
We thank the Markle.
Otherwise, we have to do a demo. Okay, any further comment or show?
Right, remind me, comment. So could you look down at the graph? Could you read that paragraph down at the bottom? So what I did, Geraldine, was I simply said that the culmination here will be a staff report by the end of January, comprehensive staff. And my statement is that there will be a number of intermediate steps to get us to that staff report, including the listing tasks for the implementation tasks. But if I haven't captured your attention, let me know. Well, the only problem with that timing is that the staff is not going to be able, with the implementation of everything else that's going on, to get a membership staff report ready in time for the launch of the task force. What I can do is prepare a charge to the task force that lays out in more detail the specific questions to be addressed. And we've already done that. If you look at this resolution here, you'll see that we list the specific things that we're supposed to tackle at first. Notice that the board of presidents can assign other things to them later. I don't mean to cut off the objection.
Why don't I? No. Let's make a staff commitment prior to completing the formation of initiating the formation of that. Charge. Go ahead and change the resolution.
Yeah, that's procedural. It will circulate the proposed charge to the task force. And the president, under this language, can just simply assign it. Michael can assign it without running it past the U.S.
Very briefly, I want to say, because this is an important matter and it's coming at the end of a very busy 2 days, I want to avoid any misimpression of anyone who's participating or listening to this, that the board feels that in some respects that the efforts of the Marshall Foundation are misdirected. To the contrary, I think we all believe that this is entirely supportive of the direction that the board has directed the staff to pursue, that we have both a big challenge and additional resources, but we want to be very disappointed because we have a worldwide constituency dealing with American Foundation. We want to avoid the impression to anybody that an American Foundation has somehow or other gotten itself into our policy making, which either they intend or we intend.
Thanks very much for the clarification. Now let me call for somebody to close for voting. All in favor of the resolution? Anyone opposed? Thank you. Okay. With that, I would like to thank everyone for coming and formally close this meeting, but just so you don't run away the moment I say close, invite you all to stay to hear some brief comments by my team. And with that, genuinely, thank you all very much. See you all in March, and then look forward to meeting before. I hope that you might get to signing with Mike Dando.
As chairman of Network Solutions, thank you, Esther. As chairman of Network Solutions, I had asked Esther just for a moment if I could to say a word to the board of ICANN, and I thank you for that. For those of you who don't know, the internet business for me has been a first-year journey. I started as a young person in DARPA in 1969, so 30 years later, here we are. Many of you have been in that situation. I'm the individual who acquired this company in March of 1995 on behalf of the parent company, SAIC. So everything that has gone on between all parties, I have watched and been part of that with great interest and action. I'd like to say this. I think this is a seminal moment. Many months ago, our board of directors was quite clear that much of the conflict and debate and argument that had gone on between many parties about these matters that are all of first impression
These are all new areas that have to be resolved by the global community over many months and years to come with something where we need to move on. So on behalf of myself as chairman and the members of the board of directors and all the senior management of Network Solutions, we made the pledge to the Department of Commerce and to Esther and Mike that we would try our best to work in a positive, productive, cooperative manner so we could get to a set of reasonable business-like agreements where all parties could move forward to the future to assure the stability, security, and reliability of this internet system, which has taken many thousands of people 30 years to reach the point we're at today. So there are many heroes in the story of what has happened, and many of them are here in this room that deserve great credit. Much has been said this morning, and I won't belabor that, about people who need to be something very much said about them. When you don't know people, many times you harbor suspicions about them. And I think one of the things that has certainly struck me over the last year or so is I've gotten to know Mike Roberts and Esther and Louie and Joe Sims, and certainly Andy Pincus, the general counsel of the Department of Commerce, and Bechler, Mark Ryan, and Aaron Rose, is that everyone has been well-intentioned and well-meaning. We've had no bad people involved in this. As people have gotten to know each other, they've understood that there were differences in opinion. But the best thing about what I think for inviting our board last week did is that reasonable people, if they simply keep talking, can come up with business-like approaches to take solve in the future. So I applaud the work of my team. I think those of you who have been members of the board, I've watched it very carefully for some time. The members, I think, will certainly continue the business-like processes and procedures in this organization. So Network Solutions pledges to you and the community, as we did at our press conference a month ago with Secretary Daley, that we will be constructive, positive participants in this ongoing global process that is still, in my mind, in the early days of this great business and technical revolution that will sweep the globe. So if at any point you see anything you believe our company is not doing to be constructive or positive, I want you to know, and I mean that very personally, call me and let me know, and I'll come and talk to you about it, because we do not want to be ever seen from this point forward as an obstacle. We want to be a constructive, business-like player in a very tough process that has many unresolved issues. So I pledge that to you today on behalf of our company. And, I thank you for the work that you have been doing. I think it's important to each and every one of us. So thank you for the opportunity to say that.
Thank you for your comments and the substance behind them, and welcome to the community.